Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Being Curious with Nomi. We are a team of coaches, therapists, and mental wellness professionals, and we can't wait to dive in with our curiosity to today's topic. Each episode is a little bit different, but we always bring our curiosity, of course, and something fun to explore for other self-aware individuals like ourselves. I'm Madeline, a certified professional coach, and I will let my lovely co-hosts introduce themselves.
I'm Maggie. I am a coach with Nomi.
And I'm Ellen. I'm also a coach with Nomi.
And I'm Cynthia. I'm a licensed mental health counselor and a coach with Nomi.
So welcome back, everyone. And I have a curious question for you, as always, which is, how have you been waking up lately?
I've been waking up and diving right into TikTok, and I'm not really sure how I'm waking up every morning.
Oh, there we go.
How about you, Mom?
Actually, I have been waking up overwhelmed, and I get really mad at myself because I say, Cynthia, you talk to people all day long about how not to wake up overwhelmed, right? That is not a desirable state. And you'd think after all this time on this earth, you would not wake up overwhelmed. But there you have it.
Right. There should be this cosmic agreement that the second you become a therapist or coach, the universe just lets you decide how to wake up.
Yeah. I know. Wouldn't that
be nice? Then grant that wish.
Yes. Yeah.
What about you, Ellen?
I've been waking up also feeling a sense of overwhelm. I think that I must be tossing and turning a lot at night because I am not sleeping well. I'm waking up and I'm tired. Mm. And so this morning I hit the snooze alarm a lot and it shows in my hair.
If all the podcasters, Ellen's face is very guilty.
I do. I know I'm waking up in the middle of the night and I'm noodling on things. I'm waking up and thinking about work things and I'm thinking about other things in my life that are kind of gnawing away in my brain right now. And I wake up in the middle of the night and I think about them and then I have to get rid of the thoughts out of my mind and think about something like fun or happy or soothing so that I can go back to sleep.
Oh, so Ellen's waking up like all hours of the day, not just the morning.
I know. Yeah. Many times, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it's a bad cycle to be in because then by the end of the day, I'm really tired. I don't know. I've got these crazy sleep patterns going on right now.
How are you doing, Madeline?
I have been waking up feeling very depleted. I'm really usually quite grounded in the areas of rest. And I find that I'm usually either physically depleted or mentally depleted. And so it's been a real curveball the past couple of weeks to be hitting both physical and mental depletion. I find it's tough to move through that one.
Really is.
I get a little lost on the way.
Yeah. It feels like that's the scenario for a lot of times. You might be depleted in one area and you can work through it using the other, right? Yeah. You're mentally depleted. So maybe you do something that's more physical, go for a walk or whatever it is that you do and pick up a little bit of mental energy or just mental relief. But when you're depleted in both places, that's a hard place to be.
Truly. Yeah. And I'm curious, Maggie, because we went right over the beginning, which
I
think actually was probably apropos because you hinted at some avoidance over there. So dive a little deeper here because the podcast is not all about just doom and gloom and waking up in overwhelmed depletion and avoidance. So we want to go a layer deeper here. So Maggie, tell me a little bit more about how you came to that conclusion that you were not sure how you felt.
Because I'm even for a loss of words right now because I know I'm waking up and I'm not even pausing. I'm grabbing my cell phone immediately, which then already like totally taints the water because then it's just like social media and everything all up in my face. So I'm not even getting like a clean read on how I'm functioning. And if I had to psychoanalyze that, I would guess that I'm probably not waking up filled with like joy and hope every morning if I'm numbing out first thing on my phone. But I'm curious because you all have such a good read. Like you all had such lovely words. It was like depleted, overwhelmed. How did you all figure that out? Help?
Yeah. I have a thought about this. I have a thought about everything. Are we surprised? I have a thought about everything.
I wish we had like your thoughts, Madeline.
We love your thoughts. Please share. She's,
right. We need a virtual talking stick.
I know. It's because you use the word, you use the phrase, if I could psychoanalyze that, and this is so real, because I think the answer to your question is the inverse of that, which is that I just checked in with my physical existence. Mm-hmm. Because I've had the luxury of being through that process enough, I know what depletion feels like for me physically. So it saves me the mm-hmm. analytical process of when introspection becomes bordering on a little bit toxic because we're intellectualizing instead of feeling connected to the thing. So I could come to that term and it sounds shiny and polished because my data on feeling that is large enough, unfortunately, that when depletion settles in for me, I can feel the physical triggers. Like I feel how it lands in my body. I also feel myself going to my head. And that's where I came to the conclusion I was mentally and physically depleted, because usually when I'm physically depleted, I can feel myself escaping my body and just living in my brain. But then I was like, nobody's home up here. I keep ping ponging.
Nobody's home.
Yeah. Nobody's home. Yeah. How about you, Ellen and Mom?
For me, I feel less physically depleted, but I've really been focusing on moving my body more. I always say if I'm stressing about something or I'm obsessing about something, like I just need to get out in nature and take a walk. And I've been doing a lot more of that. I think my overwhelm is more like all the things that are churning through my brain right now.
I'm sensing a trend though. Like we're all taught, well, not me. I will now that I know, but awareness tip, right? It sounds like it's body related too. So you're noticing that something that is helpful to you is moving your body. Madeline has noticed that like checking in with her body in the morning helps give a good tell on how she's
waking. They're so aligned. Like they're so aligned, I think. And I never really recognized that until I moved into a neighborhood about 4 years ago, and it has lots of land for walking. And I just love the trees and the birds and the deer and I saw a coyote a couple weeks ago, and it really perks me up in my head when I'm out doing that and I get back inside and I'm like, I feel better about things.
For sure. Zooming one out from action as well is in increasing awareness. I'm so glad you brought up the pattern of body, having the mind, body, spirit triangle. Before you conclude anything, just staying in that data collection, what is the state of my body? What is the state of my mind? What is the state of my spirit? And not trying to put meaning on it, but just listing. So for me, it was like, no, it feels like no one's a home in my mind. And then once I zoom out and look at all the data collection points, I can say, what would I call this? It doesn't have to mean anything to anyone else, but what would I call this state? So that when I bump into it again, and if I've come up with some action plans, maybe I'll know my way out of it a bit easier. Well, but in the beginning, it's quite hard. I know.
Know me way out.
Know me way out.
Maggie, you're out in nature a lot.
Here's the thing, right? I love that Madeline just brought up mind, body, spirit, because I can tell you, I am very much living in my head these days because my like spiritual components, so like my meditation, my mindful, that has fell off the radar, right? And for someone who considers themselves in tune with their body signals, I have stopped paying attention to those too. So I think that is what's happening in the morning, is that I'm not checking in with those things and I'm purely existing and psychoanalyzing, right? And therefore, I'm not gathering my full data set.
Well, and you talk about something that's really important, and this is what I was finding, is that my behaviors were problematic. The behavior of perhaps for you, Maggie, of grabbing my cell phone as opposed to lying on the floor or doing a quick meditation or whatever. I noticed for me with my overwhelmed that my behaviors were problematic for me, to the point where I came home one night and I said, okay, I want to cancel life. I'm just letting you all know I'm canceling life for at least the next 24 hours. And they all looked at me like, what does that mean? That's a little problematic for us that you're canceling life. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. I probably shouldn't say canceling life. That is problematic. So how about I'm just feeling really overwhelmed? So that's where I came up with my word, is because I was freaking out my family. Was just like, oh my God, the therapist wants to cancel life. That's really problematic.
This I think, also shows something really important, a little myth that we need to bust here, which is we live our patterns before we recognize them, even after we've named them. I think there's this mythical thing, and that speaks to what you were talking about earlier, Mom, when you were saying, like, I'm a therapist, so this shouldn't be a thing for me anymore.
Right.
But once you've recognized a pattern, awesome. It means you can recognize it more easily in the future. It doesn't mean that it stops happening, even after you feel you've mastered it. Like, the four of us all the time have these conversations of, I know, Maggie, you and I will talk about, like, oops, me 2 years ago has entered
her head. Yeah.
Right.
She's back. It is so true, but we're humans before we're coaches and therapists. And
amen.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you get busy with stuff, right? And all of a sudden it's, oh, you know, I'm not journaling, or I'm not meditating, or I haven't been to yoga in a while, or haven't, whatever it is that you do to fulfill the mind, body, spirit needs. And then you wake up one morning and you're like, man, I'm out of whack. And I feel crappy. But now we all have tools that we use that help us to get out of crappy and back into balance.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was going to say, Ellen, I'm like, I selfishly want to commandeer this whole call and just make it coaching into Maggie. Okay, now we have the awareness, right? And you just rattled off 86,000 tools that I know exist, but I'm not currently using. And now I'm like, well, if Ellen has 18 different tools, like, what does Cynthia and Madeline have up their sleeves?
Before we go into tools, she has another thought. I think this is what coaching is about, or this is what session work is about as well, because I find this with my own coach. I had this aha moment literally hours ago where I always think to myself, oh no, I have to be like preserving my coaching sessions for these like huge transformational leap moments when I'm on the cusp. And some of the most powerful coaching sessions I've ever had with my coach are just doing the work, like literally in the session, doing the tool, not saving it for homework, not doing. Yes, life is lived between my coaching sessions, and I have to continue to use the tools to create habits out of them. But those moments you're describing, Ellen, of when you hit the wall and you're like, oh, how did I get here? Whoops, I have done the doing of life and forgotten about the being of it. And I am facing the music now. Mm-hmm. And those are great timing points for a session, because that's when I go to my coach, and without judgment and without any of the self-judgment or judgment from her, I'm like, I have fallen off of the wagon. Please, can we focus on getting me back on?
The wheel came off the bus.
Yeah. The wheel of life hath spun me to
the wheel of life.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm so happy you brought that up, though, because it's true, right? You are all throwing heavy words out there, right? Overwhelmed, depleted. Cynthia's screaming, I want to cancel life. When we are in that state, sometimes it's really hard to do that work ourselves, right? Even, we're all sitting here very well educated. We know how to walk somebody through it, but it takes that partnership sometimes to, like you said, just live time, do the work.
That is another thing that is really helpful, is knowing who are your peeps, right? That will hold that space for you. And to be able to use the language. I know I play that role for a lot of people, because we've developed a relationship in the counseling space or in the coaching space where they can just call me up and say, hey, could I have a session? They might call it a tune up or a hit a bump or whatever. And it's really great to have that person in your back pocket.
Madeline, you were reminding me of something that I'm learning as a coach, which is sometimes the magic doesn't happen in a session. It happens between.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And I've had a few instances of that lately, and it's been pretty awesome, actually, where I have a session and I'm not sure there are any ahas going on, but there's like a lot of resonance in terms of the conversation or what's coming from the client as a result of our coaching session. And then we'll get together in our next session, and the aha came somewhere after we finished. And I find that is my own personal experience too. Sometimes you're having these moments of recognition and resonance in a session, but you might need to just go away and spend a little more time on it.
Being curious, right?
We are criminals.
But I know.
That really resonates, Ellen. And I think what's really hard about that for me is that I'm an outcome girly. And learning to fall in love with the process has been really challenging for me. And that's where I get myself in the trap as well, is that when I hit that wall of falling off the wagon, being spun too hard by the wheel of life, usually it's because I've teetered back into being outcome driven. Mm. And in moments when I'm at my worst, quote unquote, of being in an outcome driven space, I also find that partnering with people and external systems that are very good at the messy middle helps me to get through the moments. Because the other illusion is that when we are in these spaces, that we and we alone have to get out of them. And that is exactly what we were talking about, Maggie, with partnership with your coach. Yeah. And it doesn't have to just be coaching. It can be anything you lean on, but you don't have to do everything yourself. Oh. Yeah. You have to listen to yourself and check in with yourself, and it's your responsibility to take the initiative, but external validation, external systems, external like little dopamine gifts, they're awesome. Use them.
Yes, they really are.
Yeah, but I'm going to be a little bit of a devil's advocate just because I can, right?
Ooh, you little
devil. And because I bump into this. I'm like, yeah, I hear you, Madeline. I can sit in the messy middle for others, but not for myself. And so why can't I just go from the beginning to the end? Aren't I aware enough? Aren't I whatever? And I'm pretty not very nice to myself. Get over it, Cynthia. And then you want me to go tell someone? You want me to trauma dump on somebody? You want me to be a burden? You want me to be a negative Nelly, a buzzkill? I'm not going to do that either. And then, of course, then the loop continues because now I'm mad at myself for that. Downward because spiral. You're not a burden, Cynthia. They want to be helpful. You're not trauma dumping. You're not, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's really challenging, isn't it? That sometimes we are our own worst enemies.
Sometimes. It's like a daily thing for me. Are you kidding?
That's a paradox, though, to be able to coach people through something that you can sometimes not coach yourself through.
Yeah.
It's humbling. Yes. It really is. But it's okay. And believe me, I have all those same thoughts and challenges. Gee, why can I not seem to bring this to fruition and all of that? But I can help other people do it. It's a mystery.
This is just reminding me too, because we were talking about like how you're waking up, and what is coming up for me is I know Cynthia was just literally inside my head, all those things she was just saying very aggressively. I'm like, oh my God, that's my inner voice. But what I know is that it gets really loud when I'm not resting well and when I'm starting my day off on the wobbly foot, like that much I know. Right. And so I think that is such an argument for having that awareness, even from the moment you open your eyes, of taking that internal inventory. Yeah. Because otherwise, it adds jet fuel.
Right? You don't have enough energy, right? Or immunity from your inner saboteur, the loud voice in your head telling you all the negative things. When you don't have enough energy, or you're not fueling yourself in some way, mind, body, and spirit, it's like not having a vaccine when you need one. And all of a sudden you've got it.
As to earlier when I was talking about how we live our patterns before we recognize our patterns, the other thing is that our patterns aren't consistent, right? There's this other illusion that because it's a pattern, that it's the only thing that happens to us. But we have so many different things that play out, sometimes simultaneously. And when we feel like we have a handle on one thing in isolation, when it crops up, then another thing will crop up. So for me, when I was talking about how I'm used to being cognitively depleted or physically depleted, but not both, I know what I do for myself when I'm physically depleted, that like I have certain things that I do that lean more on my cognitive abilities and help me get into a space that allows me to be more physically rested, and vice versa. But when I'm up against a wall, and oftentimes this is what happens, is that we get to the most extreme point of it and we are spiraling and spiraling, and it's really difficult to figure out how to start spiraling upward. And there's a couple of things that come to mind here that I'm curious to hear your thoughts are, which is there's stuff we do proactively when we're out of that space, right? And then there's stuff that we do when we're in it. And ideally, once you're in it and you're out of it, you can start to think proactively again. But often what happens is we haven't done the proactive work and we're in it. So what are some of the ways that any of you have learned and explored, or some tools that you use for your reactive toolkit rather than just your proactive toolkit.
The power of the pause. Yeah, every bone in my body, I learned when I would get into these overwhelmed states was to even run faster, right? Mm. Cognitively, my brain's going, no, just outrun it or shut it down.
I think I got that gene from you, Mom.
Yeah. Sorry. But no, and then when I realized that I needed to do what the at the moment when I'm in it, actually the counterintuitive thing.
Totally relate to that. That makes a lot of sense. And I'll do the same thing. I think of it as like a computer that has too many tabs open and it won't work anymore. You got to just shut it down, do a little self-care.
That's, oh, you just brought that up. Ellen, you're in my brain. Because I was like, this is the moment. Because I agree. It's the thing I always don't want to do that I need to do. And I am forever on a mountaintop screaming how hard authentic self-care can be sometimes, because that's what it is. You're at this pinch point and you're like, the thing I really need to do is the thing I really don't want to do. It's the scarier thing, right? It's the thing that fills us with fear. It's you have a whole new pile of gremlins that are like screaming at you. If I slow down and pause and stop, this is going to make it so much worse. And so it's being able to just sit with increased discomfort for like a smidge to get the bigger payoff at the end.
Both of you were saying something similar too. Mom, when you talked about the pause, you said my inclination is to speed up and right. So I slow down, right? So pause works for you because the maladaptive pattern that you recognize is that you accelerate. And so you know in your wisdom that slowing down helps you. And Maggie, you were just saying the exact same thing, which is that going to the opposite space. And so how this might look different is I'm a speeder upper, but if you were a slower downer, actually, do you know what? I'm not even going to say it. Like Maggie, you're a slower downer. So what is your opposite when you slow down?
So that you don't stop.
Yeah, that's hard. It's a very fine line for me. Actually, it's a very fine line. I think it takes a lot of awareness and like setting little concrete goals and keeping my eyes on like my values and what I'm doing because I am much happier when I'm moving at a slower pace. My brain feels better, but it can tip to a screeching halt like very quickly. And then all of a sudden, I'm back in that space where I'm beating myself up for not moving faster and not getting more done. And then that's where the fear and the overwhelm start to kick in. Mm-hmm. So I think it just comes down to continued mindfulness. Also having some like internal accountability for myself.
It's for some reason, what's coming up in my mind is boundaries, making sure I know that is really important for me, is reinforcing boundaries, whether it's how much of my time I'm willing to give to work, whatever, people. Because I know that I need alone time to recharge my battery. And when I don't have enough of it, that's very depleting for me. So even over this past weekend, like I had a lot of different things going on, but I had a chunk of 4 hours where I was just like, I did a yoga class. I went for a long walk. It helped that the weather was finally nice for a small pocket of time. But I think there's like a boundary thing for me when I'm feeling overwhelmed that helps me to feel like I'm getting things back. My little ducklings are back in a row. And by the way, the ducklings in the Boston Public Garden are wearing their Easter bonnets.
Oh, cute.
We're talking boundaries and slowing down. I'm like running away from the geese. Look at me. And I usually love animals. But Madeline and Cynthia, you guys are such doers. And I know you are such like intentional human beings who are always doing like great things. It's not like you're like running around puncturing tires and causing havoc. I'm like anticipating though. I'm like, I can imagine. How do you pick and choose, right? Or how do you decide where you want to slow down without it turning into this total, look at Madeline, I'm just going to stop talking because I feel like you already have
that. I'm like one of those horses inside of those like racing things. I'm like, just let me at it, Maggie.
You're embodying exactly what I'm talking about right now. Oh, but I think you know where I'm going.
I know. I do know where you're going. And I'm also like laughing because Mom and I were just not 45 minutes ago having this exact conversation where I was like crying and being like, it's just as hard to not want to do anything as it is to want to do everything. Like my problem now is that I love it so much.
It's so
I know,
true.
Like I'm having that empathy moment for the two of you though, because I get that. I can see that for you.
It's so true.
One of the things that came up in the conversation for me at least is Mom in her infinite wisdom. She said, any extreme is difficult. But what happens is even when I'm in the space of I want to do it all, it triggers scarcity. And that sounds counterintuitive because I want all, but it's actually making me fixate my mind and my focus on not enough, not enough time, not enough purpose, not enough fulfillment, not enough energy, not enough money, not enough. Right. So one is checking in with myself about my definition of what enough is, knowing that in each moment, in each week, in each month, in each year, how I fulfill that enough, how I add, what the pieces are might look different, but knowing what my enough is really important. And one of the other things that I do, which is incredibly counterintuitive, is because I know I'm in scarcity, I ask myself not what I need to do less of, but what I need to have more of. And this is really important to my like psychology, because a lot of times when I'm overwhelmed or I'm depleted, it's because I'm time scarce or because I'm doing too much. And so, Ellen, as you were saying with the boundary conversation, what's hard for me is that if I'm not careful, a boundary would be like, I have to take something away from myself. I don't want to take anything away from myself. But boundaries can also be about not reducing what's outside of the boundary, but expanding the space inside of the thing you're trying to protect, inside of the container in that space around you. And so I ask myself, what do I need more of in order to get through this time? Kind of like a bear in hibernation. Like, what munchies do I need to pick up in order to make it through the dry spell, the like hibernation period, like more, not less. And it really helps me.
Yeah, no, that speaks perfectly to what you were saying, like proactive. Right? Mm-hmm. Like just having those like constant updated definitions of what is enough and just being like watching the boundaries that you're setting and making sure they're like not turning into self-criticism and out of scarcity. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that helps me and is that I always have a to-do list running in my head. And that when I am facing this overwhelmed, it usually means not only is my to-do list too big, and like Madeline was saying, I go into scarcity mindset as well. It's, oh my God, the to-do list, it's never ending. It's never ending. It's never ending. And so what I do is I try to pause, and this is why I like the pause, of what I to-did list, meaning that I don't go through a 24-hour period where I didn't do anything. If we're living, we're even doing breathing. Right. And so I have another list that's called my I did list. I am still checking off 45 items, but they just look different. That satiates my need to run any faster.
It's so funny because mine's almost the inverse, where to put some gas in my tank, I almost have to make those lists of here's what I need to do and here's where I want to go, because otherwise, I just like spin and sputter.
Yeah, I have a little tool that might be able to help people. So I used to actually use this a lot in business. It's called an impact effort matrix. So you have four quadrants, so a little x-axis and a y-axis. And one of the lines is low impact to high impact. And the other line is high effort to low effort. So because I'm introducing this tool and because Maggie said she wanted to hijack the session for Maggie, I'm going to put her on the spot and I'm going to force her to do it. So Maggie, what is something that is, we'll just focus on one aspect that is low effort for you?
A task that is low effort for me.
Yes.
Getting outside and sitting in the sun and doing a little journaling.
And is that a high impact or a low impact task?
High impact.
Okay, so that lives in low effort, high impact, right? Getting outside and journaling. Now let me know something that is high effort.
High effort for me would be, let's say it's still in the realm of journaling, but like visioning for myself. Mm. So like doing the tasks of looking out 6 months or like a year and going bigger picture.
Yeah.
That's hard for me. That takes a lot of energy.
And where is that on the impact spectrum?
Also high impact, but it takes a lot. Yeah.
Now, what's something that is low impact, but low energy as well?
Texting a friend and just going back and forth. Yeah.
And what about high effort, low impact?
Doing my laundry.
Ooh.
I'm in that camp.
So what I love about this as well is that sometimes it can reveal things to us, which is that we don't realize that something quote unquote simple might actually be high effort for us. Yeah. And the payoff is crap. So there's no point in focusing. So when you list out activities, and I mean, if you were going to spend the more attention on this, I would really focus on the high impact spaces. But then focusing in that low effort, high impact space, I would actually say it ends up being three things. So basically everything that's high effort, high impact, everything that's low effort, high impact, and then everything else that's low impact. Doesn't matter if it's high effort or whatever. It creates three different states that you can wake up in the morning, right? So when I'm waking up super high energy, some of the things I might put on my plate when I have a choice are the things that are high impact, high effort, because I have the expendable energy to be able to contribute. Mm-hmm. When I'm waking up low energy, I'm going to go to my low effort, high impact little space. And I'm going to try and get as many of those things in the day as possible, even if it's against my plan of what I thought was going to be possible that day. And that's going to give me just enough to be able to maybe move a little bit higher on the effort spectrum. But oftentimes what happens is when we create routines for ourselves, when we create lists of things, we don't account for the fact that we have a lived, varied experience, right? Mm-hmm. Washing my face, I find very annoying. I find it annoying because of the height of my sink. I find it very annoying. I know I'm 6'2" and I end up just like dumping water down my forearms. It's horrible. So washing my face feels like a whole thing when I wake up low energy. And so sometimes I'm like, girl, give yourself a pass. Don't wash your face as much. Yeah, it's fine. Girl, don't wash your face, whatever that anti-book is.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, I know. What you're talking about.
What really is resonating for me when I'm thinking about this is that high impact equals I'm giving myself energy. And so if I'm coming from a low energy place, of course, I want to have the impact replenish me. And maybe it's going to replenish me enough that I can get to a high impact, high energy so that I can keep refueling. Mm-hmm. Because nothing, it's not a, like a whole day is either one quadrant or another. Mm-hmm. It's like you were saying, multifaceted, is that there's parts of the day that I'm in one quadrant. How can I keep refueling, using kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm happy you walked us through that because I'm having like a little aha moment over here. I'm like such a visual person. I really wanted like a whole map as we were doing this. But what's coming up for me is when I, let's say, was in the midst of doing like the heavy work for myself, I kept like a literal list on my phone of like, here are the things that I know that work. And the reason why I did that was because I knew when I was in a low energy space, I was saying like I'm waking up like numbing out on TikTok every morning, that would be like ready to go. What has happened is that when I have been, which I have been recently, in this low energy space and like the cyclical bogged down space, the things that even though like they're low energy and high impact, like they've also just fell off the radar. Mm-hmm. I didn't have them ready to pluck. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing the thing of sitting down and writing for half an hour or getting out in the sun. I wasn't doing those things, right? And so it just compounds.
One of the other things that I think is really important that we did touch on before is that when we are in the depletion, in the overwhelm, in the depressive cycle, in any of these really low lows, having sessions can be really powerful because it's a place of receiving. And a lot of what we're talking about with these tools, doing them ourselves can be really hard because all of the effort is on us. But one of the wonderful things about coaching and therapy is that you're in partnership. So you've got that whole two minds are better than one situation where it's not that your coach or your therapist is going to tell you what's going on for you, but they get to be a mirror and they get to pick up on some of the things that might be higher cognitive load for you to pick up on. And when we're in these vulnerable states, it can be really hard to do that on our own. And so whether you're in a reactive space, which is often when people do come to therapy or coaching for the first time because they're in crisis, or you're in a proactive space and you want to be able to build these lists for yourself, build this awareness so that you're prepared, you have fortification for when you are in these low lows. And that has been life-changing for me. I don't just say that around the role I play for my clients and the space that we create together, but the space my coach holds for me is massive. Yeah. And even just knowing I have a session with her next week, it reminds me how I am now is temporary. Because if I can just make it to that session, I have someone else on the job. And there are two truths that come from that. One, it reminds me I'm not in this alone. Someone is in my corner at all times. And that in and of itself is a low effort, high impact knowledge thing. And the second piece of knowing is time heals a lot. And so making it to that appointment often means a lot of it has passed. And so just by focusing on something I know is going to be replenishing in the future, I can let go of the need to fix it now. I can just give myself that space to ease into what I'm feeling, to be present to it, and to not have to do all of this heavy lifting right this second. So that is what we do at Nomi. That is what the four of us do with our one-on-one clients and in group work. So if you want that type of person in your life, we really invite you to reach out to us. You can find out more at nomi.com. We are happy to hold space for you and excited that you are with us. But before we wrap up, I think we didn't do it last time because we had the unconventional book club and we were throwing quotes around everywhere. But Cynthia, do you have a quote to close the episode?
No, but I know that Ellen has one that she's waiting to share.
The quote is, "We cannot change the wind, but we can adjust the sails," by Aristotle.
I love this because also, because we always have to take the metaphor to the extreme, but adjusting the sails takes certain skill set. You know what I mean? So sometimes we need to practice the skill. There's the knowledge and there's the skill, and they can be different. We can have different levels of each.
Sometimes the wind dies down and you just have to wait for it to come back up again.
I hate when that happens.
Me too. I'm like sitting on a stalled sailboat.
But that's why you just got to float.
Yes. And it's beautiful scenery.
Or Dory says in Finding Nemo, just keep swimming.
Okay, so she says she doesn't have a quote. But really? She's
but there it is. Just keep swimming. That was perfect. We might be the only podcast quoting Dory.
So true. Thank you for all being with us. We hope that you got some value out of this episode. We are back in another couple of weeks. And until next time,
be well.
Thanks for listening to Being Curious with Nomi. Did you learn something new or feel inspired by something in this episode? Then please pass it along.
Sharing our podcast is the best way you can help us to inspire more self-awareness and curiosity in the world. And if you're curious about how we can support you, head to nomi.com to see how we can work together one-to-one.
We know it takes a village, and we're grateful you're a part of ours. This is Cynthia,
Maggie,
Ellen,
and Madeline
asking you to be good to you.